Hello, everybody, and welcome to this episode of Real Life, Real Crime Daily for Monday, May the 20th, 2024. And as always, I'm your host, Woody Overton. And y'all, we almost have everything worked out on the, whatever you want to call it, legal side of the Daily Show. So look forward probably by Friday at the week after, I'll update you on everything. We'll tell you exactly what's coming for Real Life, Real Crime Daily and other Real Life, Real Crime stuff. So it's Monday, and I hope everybody had a good time at O'Hara's Irish Pub, 136 3rd Street, downtown Baton Rouge, with me on Saturday night. And you got to see the live, and you know, their tagline is "Welcome Home." 35 different beer taps throughout the establishment, y'all. Any kind of beer, ice cold beer you can imagine, plus some largest selections of whiskeys and all that good shit in Baton Rouge. Great place. Welcome home. Y'all go check them out. Open every day except for Monday from, I think, 2 p.m. or 3 p.m. until. Let's get down to some true crime time for Monday. All right. Let's go back to August of 2005. Now, this is something I generally don't talk about because I have PTSD about two things. And if you could believe that, all the shit I've seen, all the shit I've done, dead babies to dead old people to serial killers to whatever. The only two things I really have PTSD about are 9/11 and Hurricane Katrina. I don't know why. I can't explain it, but it is what it is. And Katrina, geez Louise, it was, I remember it's coming in as a Cat 5, and I had a fishing camp down south in Chauvin, Louisiana, and me and my buddy drove down the less than 36 hours before we're supposed to hit, and we boarded up my camp, and I had this old ice box. I'm talking about like a 1950s that I had out on the deck on the porch. And the only reason I had it was to keep beer in it, right? And it made your beer where it had ice in it. And we took those big yellow toe straps, for lack of a better word, this big heavy nylon straps, and three of them screwed it into the wall of the camp and everything, you know, to try to save that. And naturally, we boarded up everything and the doors and the windows. I mean, it was like fucking Fort Knox, right? Couldn't get in it. Then we drove back. I could tell you that we use unmarked vehicles. So we use our lights and stuff to get through the traffic and all that. And this is all right before the storm hit the following morning. And then I didn't get back down there because all the shit show that it was. Katrina came, and I guess I'll tell stories about that one day, but it was a total shit show. And then, you know, what happened in New Orleans, we were the first SRT team to have boots on the ground in the city of New Orleans, even for the state police. But we got called back because of all the rumors that were running rampant about the evacuees. Like they were supposed to be raping and pillaging and all this shit in Livingston Parish. Yeah, but they weren't. But anyway, we worked 30 something days straight. I can remember getting a 5-minute nap on my desk, and I'm just being so tired. And we had the evacuee center set up, and it was just, you know, crime didn't stop, and everything was just all fucked up. But that wasn't the end of it. And at the end of that 30 days, Hurricane Rita hit Lake Charles. And once again, Willie Graves, being the sheriff that he was, he sent our SRT team over there first to help them in with everything, law and order and cutting trees, and sit, and we spent however much time there, and shit, crime didn't stop, right, in Livingston Parish. So it was like 60 days before I got to get back to my camp, and it was still flooded down there. But we were able to get in and get to the camp, and the first thing I noticed was my old ice box was gone, totally ripped from the building. Okay, now you got to remember, Katrina went to the east of this location. Plywood doors screwed in over the camp, and all the doors, all the windows screwed in. I'm thinking we're gonna be good. You know, basically the camp was still standing, and opened those fuckers and had to force the door open after taking the plywood off. And that son of a bitch, it looked like the marsh. There was like 2 feet of mud, and there was marsh grass, and there were dead nutrirats, and all the shit. This building was sealed up tighter than Dick's hat band. And anyway, I had a boat shed, which was locked and secured, opened it up, and my boat looked like a duck blind. It was full of marsh grass. I mean, you couldn't even tell it was a boat, and we had to dig it out. Just horrible, horrible time to be a cop. There's so many stories that went on during Katrina and everything else, and Rita, but I'm going to take you to New Orleans now and tell you some updates on what's going on there from Katrina. And now my buddy Matt Potan is a captain or a major or something down there now. He was one of the only cops who actually stayed down there after the levees broke and all that, when they were shooting at the cops. And he said they were on the roof of the police precinct at night. There was no power, and people were shooting at them. I mean, it was like, you know, I don't know, Fort Apache, some shit like that. But let's go to Katrina, okay? So in August of, this is out of Fox 8 out of New Orleans, based the majority of it, and I'll just tell you my spin. But it says, in August of 2005, Hurricane Katrina forever changed the lives of those living on the Gulf Coast. And this, for this one family, their lives were changed drastically. In Pascagoula, Mississippi, y'all, Pascagoula is to the east of New Orleans. Now, I don't know what kind of voodoo luck New Orleans has, because all these big storms you see over the years, you think New Orleans got hit. It never got hit. And the New Orleans sits on Lake Pontchartrain, which is only 18 feet deep at its deepest. And they show if New Orleans ever took a direct hit once it crossed over New Orleans, that counter spin on the water would shove that 18 feet of water back into the city. Well, even on Katrina, Katrina didn't fuck New Orleans. I mean, it messed it up, but it didn't flood it. It's when the levees broke that flooded it, right? And there's nothing more powerful than moving water. But Pascagoula, Mississippi, and Bay St. Louis and all that shit, they got fucked, because at the last second, Katrina turned, and there was nothing left standing. I went down there. It looked like, and they're still recovering to this day, what, 20 years later, 19 years later, it looked like a nuclear bomb had gone off. The big mansions across the street from the beach and stuff just didn't exist anymore. It was all gone. Back to it. In Pascagoula, Mississippi, one family received much-needed closure after a DNA test identified a missing family member. Hurricane Katrina was not like any other storm to hit the Gulf Coast. Her rains, wrath, and destruction could be felt for miles, even states away. She came in like a wrecking ball, threatening everything in her path. As a result of her impact, 236 people lost their lives, and 67 more were reported missing on the Gulf Coast. Now, y'all, if you report a missing after they search everything and all that, your ass just got blown away, basically. But one in particular was 46-year-old Tanette Jackson. Hardy Jackson, her husband, explained to a reporter during the storm, said the house split in half. We got it up on the roof, all the way to the roof, and water just came in and opened it up and devoured it. Now, he's talking about his home, y'all. So he said the house split in half. We got up in the roof, all the way to the roof, and water just came in and opened it up and devoured it. Who was at your house with you? The reporter responded, my wife. Where is she now? Can't find her body. She's gone. What's your wife's name in case we can put this out there? Tanette Jackson. You know, y'all, Tanette Jackson presumed missing for nearly two decades after her husband claimed flood water swept her away. A week after Katrina's landfall, search and rescue teams combed the areas looking for victims. And an unidentified woman was found between the slabs, the cement slabs, y'all, the base of two homes in St. Martin. Now, that's a long ways away. Pascagoula Police Lieutenant Darren Versiga began digging deeper into the case of the unidentified woman in 2011, so 6 years after Katrina. Lieutenant Versiga investigates cold cases that occurred along the Mississippi Gulf Coast. I looked at every news article and never one time saw Hardy Jackson's video, or I would put it together then, he explains. I just missed it. And I'm the expert, but we have her now. We've got her name back to her, and that's the principle of all this. Y'all, for almost 20 years, Tanette's identity remained a mystery. She was buried at the Makalia Cemetery in Pascagoula. Her headstone read, Jane Love. Naturally, right, because they didn't have her name. At that point in time, it was uncertain who the individual was, noted Lieutenant Versiga. That's where Ortham Forensics entered the picture. Now, Ortham works with police investigations, helping and hoping to ultimately solve cases like Tanette's. In 2005, when Jane Love, or Tanette's, remains were found, forensic genetic genealogy was not a tool that was available. Just a few months ago, the remains were exhumed and genetic genealogy research became the last piece of the puzzle to solve the case of Tanette's identity. Her name joined those of 169 other dead and missing victims at Biloxi's Hurricane Katrina Memorial in 2013. It's somewhat closure for me. It doesn't complete it because I haven't found her, but it helps a little bit, Tanette's sister told WLOX when her name was first etched into the memorial. Hardy said, I held her hand as tight as I could, and she told me, you can't hold me. She said, you have to take care of the kids and the grandkids. Y'all, can you imagine that? You're trying to hold on to your family. The winds are blowing, you know, almost 200 miles an hour, and you know you're going to die. Hardy held on to those moments until he passed in 2013. As for Tanette's remaining family, they know where she is and that she is at peace. She's found, not missing. Wow, it's crazy, crazy story. So many. I mean, I could do a damn episode just on Katrina. It was just a total shit show. I don't know. So, well, let me take you to another story, and this is back to my second favorite state, which is Wisconsin. And I think I reported on this, or maybe that was when the audio was shitty and I couldn't do it when I was up there. But, you know, you send your kids to school and you think they're going to be okay. And, you know, my wife, Cindy, was a fifth grade teacher until I got to retire her, and she works for Real Life for Crime, right? The this is just fucking sick. But in Wisconsin, Madison Bergman, now this is the teacher, y'all, and she was engaged. She's accused of making out with a fifth grade student. Can you believe that? Now, that's the same grade as Cindy taught. She's accused of making out with a fifth grade student, but guess what? She has still been collecting her $51,000 teacher salary since her May the 1st arrest, and it's according to the New York Post. Hudson School Superintendent Nick Collette confirmed that Bergman, 24, and another teacher were placed on administrative leave from Rivercrest Elementary. The second teacher, who is not identified by name, may have had prior knowledge of Bergman's behavior but didn't report it. However, that teacher hasn't been charged with a crime. Probably going to use her as a witness. Now, if you're a fucking teacher and you know a fifth grade teacher has been making out with a kid, they had to string that motherfucker up too if she had the knowledge. But both Bergman and the anonymous teacher offered their resignation, which launched the debate on whether the district should accept them or fire Bergman outright. With the Hudson School District Human Resources Director Andrea Volker arguing that it would be an easier process to accept the resignations than firing, as termination would result in both teachers continuing to be on the payroll for several more months. Fuck that. Fire them. What if they gone in and shot up the school? Are you still going to, you know what? If we terminate them, they're still going to get a paycheck for a couple months. Fucking good riddance. Give them a check. Who gives a fuck? But last week, another student's mother claimed that Bergman moved the victim's desk next to hers so she could touch him during class without other students noticing. This bitch is fucking off her rocker. My daughter thought he was a problem kid, another student's mother told the New York Post. She said that his desk got moved next to Bergman's a couple of months ago, and she just assumed that he was in trouble. When it was time for lunch, she'd ask him to stay after class. So that just fed into the idea that he was constantly getting into trouble, the mom added. Now, look, I used to get in trouble in the fifth grade. The difference was I had a paddle with my name on it, and I got my ass beat in front of the whole class, right? My dad gave him the paddle to beat me.
Hey, everybody, it's Aggo. Listen up, especially you ladies over 40. I've got some good news. It's called Hormone Harmony. Hormone Harmony is an all-in-one hormonal balancing solution. It relieves symptoms of menopause. It promotes healthy weight loss and curbs cravings. It improves sleep quality. It reduces bloating and gas. It relieves hot flashes. It can even relieve occasional mood swings, although nothing like that has ever happened in my house. Hormone Harmony isn't just for menopause. Any woman with symptoms of hormonal imbalance should take it, but it's perfect for the horrible menopause symptoms that make you put your life on hold. For a limited time, you can get 15% off on your entire first order at happymammoth.com. Just use code RLRC at checkout. That's happymammoth.com and code RLRC at checkout for 15% off today.
If people are dieting now more than ever before, why are nearly one in three American adults overweight? Dr. Gundry, who helped thousands lose weight and feel younger and healthier, says most people are not getting enough fat-burning MCTs from their food. MCTs are a special kind of compound that doesn't turn into fat when you consume it. Instead, it turns into a chemical that breaks down the excess fat in your body.
So getting more MCTs in your diet is like flipping a switch that puts your body in caloric bypass mode, which flushes out excess fat and calories. And Dr. Gundry has created an easy way for you to activate caloric bypass right at home. It's called MCT Wellness. This powerful blend of fat-flushing MCT powders and antioxidant-rich polyphenols is designed to help you unlock your body's fat-burning, energy-producing potential. What's even better is that it comes in a tasty drink form. It actually tastes good. All you do is add a scoop to water, enjoy, and watch as you start feeling slimmer and more energized.
So if you want to experience a quick, easy, and effective way to melt pounds fast, Go to GundryMD.com/RLRC and order right now to get up to 53% off your regular price order with a 90-day money-back guarantee. And again, that's GundryMD.com/RLRC.
Awesome.
All right, good deal. Anyway, the mother's accusations echo the fifth grader's claim that Bergman, who was charged with first-degree child sexual assault of a child under age 13, would rub his thigh and calves during independent reading time in the River Crest Elementary School class, and according to a criminal complaint filed in the St. Croix District Court last Thursday. The complaint states that the child did not believe any of the other kids would see it happening due to the placement of his desk. The boy also told police that Bergman would have him stay after class and that she kissed him several times in her classroom after school or while other students were at lunch. That is a sick bitch. Bergman was released on a $25,000 signature bond. I think it should have been much higher. The parents of the 11-year-old boy overheard the child having a phone conversation with Bergman earlier in the week of her arrest, at which point they found texts between the two in which she allegedly discussed multiple encounters inside the classroom during lunch or after school, as well as how much she enjoyed him touching her and making out. This is according to the documents, y'all, the court documents. The child told investigators that he communicated with Bergman almost daily and got her phone number when they went skiing with his mother at Afton Alps during winter break, which Bergman also confirmed, though claiming it was in case they got separated at the park. What else is she going to say, I guess? An officer reportedly found a folder with the child's name on it containing handwritten notes inside Bergman's backpack. I guess that's a little old school, right? Check yes or no. But the teacher and the child were reported to have shared the notes throughout the day, which included letters detailing incidents in which they kissed each other, according to court documents. One of my cousins is in the fifth grade, and I can't imagine a man talking to her how we talk, Bergman wrote in a note shared to the child. I know we have a special relationship, and I do love you more than anyone in the world, but I have to be the adult here and stop. Oh, you're going to be the adult after you made out with the dude? Fucker. Bergman became engaged to her longtime boyfriend in December, the same month that she and the boy claimed to have exchanged phone numbers, and she scheduled her wedding for July. And this came from the New York Post, and they were citing her social media accounts. Now, the Rivercrest school principal issued a statement saying the school community was shocked and disturbed by the news. And this is in response to the allegations against Bergman. Now, what the fuck? That should be a what the fuck series. And you know what? I have the picture, and she's a young lady, and something's wrong. Something is wrong. Something is not firing there. I don't get it. I'll never understand it. It goes back to Dennis and Cynthia Perkins, and she was a fifth grade teacher, has my wife's name, taught the class. Shit, all my kids are past that age now, and I would absolutely fucking murder someone. Even in all the cases I worked, it was better to put them in prison. She's going to have a hard time when she goes to prison anyway. But it's just no excuse, bro. No excuse. And what about her fiance, bro? What do you think that dude feels? But they're still getting paid? Well, fuck, that's paid vacation. Anyway, Sorry about that noise, y'all. All right. Well, let's get off of that. You know, when the other two hosts were on Real Life Real Crime Daily, I had started kind of a series. I don't have a name for it yet. And if y'all can come up with a name for it, send it to me, because I'm going to make this a part going forward. But I just want to give y'all some tips. And these from some other sources, but I'll add my own tips in as we go. All right. Now, this is called 5 Ways to Develop Situational Awareness. Now, I've always said it, y'all. Everybody gets complacent. You're going from Walmart with your groceries to your car, and you got to fumble around for your keys or the mall, where the fuck you're at. And you're not paying attention to what's going on around you, and people get raped and mugged and kidnapped all the time, like that, or robbed. Just be aware, people. But being attentive to what's going on around you is called situational awareness. And knowing when something is out of place can save your life. But staying aware without being on high alert takes practice. I always tell y'all, be aware, not afraid, right? You can train yourself by starting to watch for certain things until you do it automatically. That would be muscle memory. If you do it every single time, you get used to doing it. It's just like putting on your blinker in the car before you make a turn. So position yourself for observation. When you're out in public, always find a position that gives you the best observational advantage. Okay, so here's something about Woody Overton. You will never, ever, ever find me sitting in a restaurant where my back's not to the wall and I can't see the front and the back door. Ever. I won't go. If a restaurant's too full and I can't get a spot that I want, fuck that. I'm not doing it, because I'm not afraid, but I'm aware of the fact that somebody could come in and be an active shooter, and I need to be able to kill them, right, and protect my family. But anyway, corners facing out are ideal, and this keeps any possible threat in front of you where you can see it. Now, when you're standing in a crowded area, position yourself in front of a wall or other surface. This will help protect you by keeping people out of your blind spot. All right. So, like, if I'm you know, Third Street this weekend, or if I'm in Bourbon Street or wherever, and I'm in a crowd, my head's always on a swivel, and I always put my money. I never carry a wallet. I always put my money in my keys or whatever. I have my ID in my front right pocket, because those kind of crowds, you get pickpockets, and they'll bump into you. One person will bump you, and the other one hit you, and you'll never know it. You'll never feel it. But they go for back pockets, right? They can't get in your front pocket like that, not without you noticing. So the people out of your blind spot, I'm always walking, looking over my shoulder just to see who's around. And because if somebody's going to come up from behind you and get you, they're going to have to run up on you, right? Or walk up fast and get you, whether they pull a gun on you or not. So the continuing, make it a game. Turning situational awareness into a game can help motivate you to stay consistent. Have whoever's with you join in. Ask questions like these and see who can come up with the quickest answer. How many men and women are in the room? How many men have facial hair? How many children are there? How many people are wearing jackets? What color are most people wearing? All right, y'all. That's a really great idea. You can do that. I turn it, Woody Overton says, just do some people watching, right? And you better believe, if you've ever been around me, I know what you look like, or I've at least filed you away mentally for a second, right? In case sugar turns to shit and, you know, I need to document it later on. It's a pretty good idea. I like that. Make it a game until it becomes normal. And then you're being aware but not afraid. All right, so know what's normal. Pay attention to what's going on around you at places you go often. Are there usually a lot of people around? If so, what ages and gender? What's the noise level typically like? Marking what's normal will help alert you when something is out of the ordinary. My take on that, I mean, I got several places like O'Hara's Pub. It's not really a normal, but you know, there's a rhythm to places that you go, whether it's a restaurant or a bar or a park or whatever, and you can, you know, do your scanning and see what's there, put yourself in the good position of observation, know where your exits are at mainly, and the I don't know that you can ever find the normal, but you can find the vibe of that place, right? And then if something starts to get loud or you notice something that just stands out, well, then you watch that person, you know? And now you got to kind of watch that too, because if I'm going to go in and rob a restaurant or something, especially if I'm like, grab the cash from the cash register or whatever, then I will be working in cahoots with somebody else, and I'll have them actually go in and cause a disturbance to get everybody to look at them, and then I'm going to do my robbery, right? So that's still a pretty good idea there. All right, next one. Notice the odd person out. Now, if something seems off to you about somebody, pay attention. Intuition is a powerful thing. If you see someone who looks like they're trying not to be noticed, stay aware of that as well. These aren't sure signs of danger, but they can be. Okay, people, I said this, I've trained people all over the United States of America. I used to have the contract to go in and train these very, very high-end jewelry stores in five different states, and most of them were the only ones in the state that were authorized Rolex dealers. And I would teach them the same thing, intuition. If you look at a motherfucker and it makes the hair stand up on the back of your neck, you better get the fuck out. That whatever deity you pray to, that's them trying to give you a fucking break and saying, hey, you know, uh-oh, you know, something's wrong here. Don't sit there and be like, oh, no, maybe I'm just being whatever. If they come in or they're walking up behind you and they give you the goosebumps, or, you know, you see something like that and you just get a gut feeling, motherfucker, listen to it. That is somebody trying to cut you a break. I'm not saying you got to run like a little bitch, but you could be, if you're concealed carry, put your hand on your weapon. And if, again, sugar turns to shit, you're ready to throw some lead, right? Or you can run, use old defense, known to man, and run, all that good stuff. So pretty good tips. Going on, tools for situation awareness. Now, these techniques will help you incorporate situational awareness into your everyday life and aid you in potentially dangerous situations. Captain Obvious here. Use your peripheral vision. Practice this while having a conversation. Begin to observe what's happening in your peripheral vision while still listening and engaging. Geez, y'all, I'm like the world's worst about that. I do it nonstop. It drives my family crazy. Here's another one. Scan your environment. Now, this comes naturally, but learn to be specific about what you're scanning for. Notice where the exits are. I already told you that one. Barriers to avoid or use to your advantage. And you better believe that gunfire breaks out, I already know where my exits are, and I know what tables I can flip over, what I can get behind. And look, I'm not fucking paranoid. I'm just realistic. This shit happens every single day, right? Notice suspicious objects or suspicious people and immediately notify someone if anything looks suspicious. And then you know what? If you don't have a pistol, do that, okay? Use reflective surfaces. Make a habit of using reflective surfaces to see behind you or outside your peripheral vision. All right, I do this everywhere, a lot of places like restaurants and shit, when I'm getting the back booth in the corner, it's either going to be by the bathroom or it's going to be by the kitchen. And a lot of them have a mirror in the corner where even the people that are coming out of the kitchen, they use it so when they hit the swinging door, they can see who's making a right or a left into that hallway. Fuck that, I use it. I mean, I know if the waiter's coming out or someone's coming out of the restroom, I fucking know it.
Why are so many dogs suffering from health issues? Actress Katherine Heigl, who's helped save over 16,000 dogs through her foundation, says she's seeing more issues with dogs' joints, odors, and health than ever before. And after doing a ton of research, she feels there's one place we can look to support any dog's health: their food. So she decided to create something she could actually feel good about feeding her dogs. It's called Superfood Complete. Superfood Complete is made with over 30 of the healthiest ingredients on the planet, including several superfoods vital to your dog's health. Badlands Ranch also sponsors the Jason Debus Heigl Foundation, which has helped rescue thousands of dogs and place them in loving homes. Dogs across America are trying this food and experiencing amazing health benefits. Go to badlandsranch.com/save50 and order right now to get up to 50% off your regular price order with a 90-day money-back guarantee. If you want your dog to experience all these incredible things, go to badlandsranch.com/save50 today.
So that's a good tip, though. Look confident and aware. Projecting confidence will make you appear less vulnerable to potential attackers. Now let's talk about this. This is so true. It goes back and ties into everything I've told you already. If you are walking out of the mall and you already have your car keys in your hand, you don't have to stop and fumble in your purse. If you're walking towards your car and you just scan the parking lot, looking left to right, not to just peripheral vision, take a second and scan the fucking parking lot. Also, look in the back seat of your car before you enter your car. If you do this, you will stop 99.9% of the attackers. You know why? Because they want an easy mark. They want an easy victim. And they're sitting out there and they're watching and they know who's paying attention, and they know who's not paying attention, okay? And they are not going to fuck with you if you have an air of confidence, like, my shit's all prepared, and I'm looking around, checking things out. Nobody does that. I want you to go sit in a Walmart parking lot or your grocery store parking lot. I want you to go sit 5 minutes before you get out of your car next time and watch how idiots people are when it comes to their own safety. You'll have people walk right beside you and never even notice you're in the car. When I used to do PI work or undercover surveillance work, fuck, people didn't know. They don't pay attention. Oh, and being on your cell phone and all that shit, fuck that. Pay attention, act confident, look around, be confident, look around, and look, if they're going to bum rush you wherever you're at, they got to close the distance between you and them. And if somebody's already coming up on you and you got the goosebumps, then you turn around and stare at that motherfucker. And they're going to leave you alone, okay? Very, very good tips, y'all. Use visualization, however you say it, to practice. So when you're in a safe space, practice visualizing yourself in dangerous situations and figure out how you would respond. That might be a little overkill, y'all. If you just do the rest of it, you'll be good. But if you need to practice, you want to practice, practice it, okay? Listen to your intuition. Your body picks up on a lot of information. So listen to the signals it's giving you. It's designed to protect you. It's been there since the fucking caveman days. Same, we've already talked about this. How do you think the cavemen outlived the dinosaurs and shit? Because they were aware that, if I'm not looking around in the jungle for this fucking pterodactyl or whatever that's hiding in the bushes, then my ass is going to get fucking ate, right? So the same thing. Listen to that voice inside of you. Listen, feel it when the hair stand up on your neck. Listen to the shit in your stomach. All the crimes that I worked where people lived, they fucking were telling me, oh, man, I just had a bad feeling about that dude. I'm thinking, motherfucker, why didn't you listen, right? But whatever. Very important, y'all. And change your course. If you think something, someone might be following you, try stopping, turning, and pretending you went the wrong way. Yeah, you do that. Turn around, make eye contact with that motherfucker, and then you'll see that they'll turn, make eye contact, and they'll cut course. Cause you know why? They want an easy victim, y'all. They don't want somebody who's paying attention. So let's do this one. Scan personal space invaders. If someone gets unusually close to you, look for several things. Is there a weapon in their hands? Well, if there is, you better fucking get out of the way. Are there any bulges in their clothes that could be a weapon? Oh, fuck it. If there are, pay attention to it. I'm going to leave that alone. And do their words or body language display aggression? Well, if they do, I would use, at last resort, I would use the oldest defense known to man, run your fucking ass off. But if you feel that, you know, immediately create at least 5 feet of distance from the individual. If the answer to any of these is yes, then quickly assess the situation for your next action, right? Y'all, these are really, really, really great tips. And it's women against, let's get it. I'm going to make sure I give these ladies credit because they're awesome. I think this is just a beautiful thing. And if you know what, here's what's so beautiful. It's Women Against Crime, y'all, that came out with this. But I've been teaching it a long, long time, probably before that organization was even together. If you feel something's wrong, believe that something's wrong. And guess what? If you're wrong about something being wrong, you're still going to be safe. If you're right about something being wrong, then chances are you're going to live, right? That's going to act as a deterrent for this person to go away. And because I love and appreciate each and every one of y'all, I want to share their tips are the same thing I've been teaching, just a little bit different verbiage forever. And I love and appreciate each and every one of y'all. And 80% of y'all are female. And it's just the world we live in. Yes, evil is out there. It exists. Will these tips stop all crimes? No, but it will stop 99.9% of them. I mean, I'm not talking about, naturally, it's not going to stop a drive-by shooting and shit, but maybe you'll see the car coming and you can take cover. But just be safe. The monsters are out there. Don't be afraid of them. Just be aware. And I'll end it with this. Screwdriver Red, Mark Lewis, the first victim he got from Quartana Mall, he watched her. He watched her numerous nights. He knew when she was getting off work. He knew where she parked enough till he slashed her tire. And he knew that when they got off work, they came out and all the people, this is for cell phones, all the workers had parked in different spots and they split up and he knew he could get her. And asked him about it. And he said, had she been aware and had anyone stayed around or anyone been around, I never would have approached her and changed that tire for her. And we know what happened after that. He caught a ride with her, put the screwdriver to her throat, and thank God she was able to escape, right? But that's it. And I'm going to end it on that note. I love and appreciate each and every one of y'all. Again, we'll give you the updates on what's going on and the changes that are coming. It's all positive. It's all good. But these things have to be worked out. And that's a shitty in a business, right? But O'Hara's Pub, 136 3rd Street, downtown Baton Rouge. Hey, they are huge lifers, y'all. Welcome home. When you walk through that door, it's a huge place. It's a lot bigger than it looks from the outside. And when you walk through that door, you're going to have the coldest beer, best drink selection, and friendly, friendly people. You know, they proud sponsors of us, and I'm a proud sponsor of them. Brian Ott, you know, if I'm not there, then ask for Brian Ott. Tell him you're a lifer and that we sent you, okay? And any final thoughts, gentlemen? Crickets, crickets, crickets. Oh, that's because I'm by myself. And till next time, I forget how we end it. Till next time, Real Life, Real Crime Daily, I'm your host, Woody Overton, and peace.